back on Downtown. It's time for Message in the Bottle. Eric Meehan from Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor, joins us as always. Hello there, Mr. Meehan.
Hey there. So we're partying all over the world.
Yeah, you know, when you're here, it is a party wherever people are.
Hey, well, that's, everybody loves the wine guy.
No question. Yeah.
All right, so let's get it out of the way. Chief, 30 to 20.
Ooh, yeah. I think you're right. I mean, I don't really care either way.
I'm not caring.
Yeah.
You know. I'm
just trying to keep.
My dad asked my pick.
So. I'm just trying to keep track of who's on the Giants staff. It seems to change daily.
You know what's really kind of sad is, and it's not just the Giants, but it seems like at this time of year, there's always like these very awkward hires of like, hey, yeah, the Giants are hiring Joe Bonifacio for their defensive. Coordinator, and you're like, who? Oh, he was just clipboard holder for Sean McVay. You're like, what? yeah, no, it's fine. He skipped a couple of iterations of job progress, but it's good. I don't know. Actually, the rumor I love the best thing, and then we'll move on to wine. I love this. Apparently, the Nantucket High School football team has an open head coach residency. I'm like, wouldn't you love Bill Belichick going to a high school? Like, I know you've got the semi-formal tomorrow, but we're going to need to practice. I mean, oh, God. It's like Ted Lasso, except much more dour. Anyway. I got to get in my football. Of course, as my son loves to remind me, like, don't worry, Dad, we've got the UFL coming. I'm like, God bless you, son. Yeah, we've got the combined bad football team with the other bad football team. And throw in the Rock for some motivation. All right, folks, it's February. We're talking wine agriculture. I like to start this sort of talking about what I call purity in the bottle. There's just, as much as I couldn't believe it, over the past couple of years, I've really noticed even more and more nonsense trying to make wine something it isn't. I think, and this is absolutely the truth, wine consumption is going down, by whole percentage points, which scares an awful lot of the old guard. So I think they're, trying to retaliate with, low-calorie wines and natural wines and healthy wines. And in my opinion, wine has never been particularly unhealthy unless you're drinking bottles of it a day. So it amuses me, but, I do like to try and sort of re-educate the public as to what really, is in that bottle when you buy it. From my perspective, the real stuff, not anything that's been tampered with. But we'll talk about that. So today I kind of want to talk about the life cycle of wine, which, of course, starts with fruit, right? Which is one of the reasons I like it so much. It's nothing that starts in a laboratory or anything like that. Of course, the better wine houses, even the tiny ones, are all very much into science. They do pay attention to science, but ultimately they understand that the science has to take a backseat to the fact that it is nature. And so I like to remind people that, though you like to talk about purity, you need to sort of understand what the grape goes through and then what the juice goes through, et cetera, because you might be surprised at where you would find purity and where you might circumvent it for the sake of either better wine or, in some cases, more homogenous junk. Grapevines are perennials, right? They die off in winter and then rebloom every year, so you don't have to replant them or anything. However, they do have a life of their own, and sometimes they get tired and old and have to be replaced. So when you hear about, for instance, an old vine fruit, right, be aware that even though people are like, well, this vineyard is on average 60 years old, there may very well be vines in there that are 1 year old, 2 year old, 3 year old, 7 year old, and older than 60. I mean, it's sort of the average age, but You constantly have to be replanting, and either you're using new rootstock and new plantings, or you're taking some of the shoots off the other vines and you kind of bury them, and it creates its own new plant eventually, which is kind of neat. Without pruning, grapevines grow into big, bushy plants. You may have come across them in your travels. I mean, again, as I reminded people last week, I believe it was, there's an awful lot of different grapevines. It's not just the vitis vinifera that we like to drink. So grapevines can be very prolific. However, we have learned to tame them by things like pruning and also training, which is to say, you know, putting them on when you look at pictures of vineyards, how they're neatly established in rows, very often with quite deliberate training. You can see that some of them look like goblets. In fact, there is an actual term called gobelet. There's the Guillot method, which is very, very common. You'll see that a lot. And it really depends both on the winemaker and also the climates. For instance, on the island of Santorini, they train them very low to the ground because it's very windy and they don't want wind damage. So the life cycle itself, right now we are in what we call dormancy, not just for grapevines, but perhaps for humans as well. But you do actually now go out and start to prune, choosing the best stems that were left over from last year to pick, and then you will prune off the other ones and very often make big piles of stuff that you'll burn off in the months to come. And what's coming up next, and this is probably the most dangerous time, is what's called bud break, when things start to warm up just a little bit. And anybody, of course, around this area knows what it's like when you have climates that are, you know, just on the cusp of cold and warm. And sometimes you can get bud break. You can fool the you know, plants, not just vines, but all these plants, into thinking it's time to wake up, it's spring, and then all of a sudden, ha-ha, fooled you, and you get massive die-offs, which is, you know, obviously something that people worry about. Frosts, you know, late frosts are very scary for a lot of people, especially since a lot of winemakers are losing a lot of product on all sorts of areas, including not just frost, but hail and things like that. So it's a dangerous time. Eventually, you'll see on the grapevines, you'll see tendrils and then little tiny grapes, which are really quite adorable and, I must say, photogenic. If anybody's a photographer and likes to focus on small subjects, they're really quite neat. And then comes the time when, you know, as things get warmer, the leaves start coming out, and you start to talk about what's called canopy management. So that is the fact that the leaves will not only, you know, participate in the act of photosynthesis, but also sometimes will shade the grapes as they grow, which is sometimes good, sometimes undesirable. Too much canopy can prevent ripening and creation of certain chemicals that you want to start to generate. For instance, famously, just this is sort of a random one, but the grape Carmenere, which is very often thought to be very sort of green, peppery, and kind of, I've had examples of it where they tell me, like, we've managed the canopy more, so we trim it a lot and get more ripening in the grape itself, and that flavor goes away. So it's really very, very relevant. Then you get flowering, which is absolutely beautiful. If anybody's ever been in vineyards in the flowering season, it's just, you know, rows and rows of just, it's like perfect. And then you get what's called veraison. Veraison is a French term, which basically means, if I may borrow from Stephen Colbert, truthiness. It's when the grapes reveal themselves. Are they white grapes? Are they red grapes? You know, the red starts to come out, the hues start to come out. And then you get to ripeness, right? So hopefully. And when you're talking about ripeness, we've talked about the term Brix before, which is basically the ratio of solids, which is sugars and other minerals, to liquids, the water, right? And you're trying to achieve a certain level of ripeness. Some winemakers like to have it less ripe, which retains some of the natural acidity. Some people like to have more sugar to water, which will create obviously a sweeter, more juicy type of wine, and also will give you more sugar to ferment out. So very often you'll get higher alcohol wines that way. And so then you're going to start to think about the harvest, right? So your vines and all the wood parts of it start to harden. The grapes are ripened, and you start to harvest. And then you get things, you do what's called the crush, right? So obviously you're getting your grapes in, you're crushing. Most people these days use mechanical crushing machines, either big tanks with basically like balloons inside that slowly inflate and gently crush the grapes. But there's all sorts of things, including I was just reading about a porthouse that has basically mechanical feet.
Oh, nice. And they're the same size as Lucille Ball's. It's crazy.
It's true. So I'm probably out of time.
About 30 seconds.
Yeah, so it's actually true. You can think about Lucille Ball doing that, except they're just, it's almost like a short circuit meets Lucille Ball. So next week we'll talk Valentine's Day, Valentine's special. Is wine good for your heart and all these other myths about the healthiness of wine. And I hope everybody has a wonderful Super Bowl Sunday. And if you don't care about the Super Bowl, I hope you have a wonderful time making fun of those of us who do.
There you go. Yeah, and they'll do that. You know they will. Oh, is there some sports ball thing on? I always like those posts.
I love it. I hope that they make a lot of home runs.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Eric.
All righty.
See you next week. Here, that's Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle. Every Tuesday here on Downtown, stop in and see Eric and the crew, 86 Hammond Street in downtown.